He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Friday Week in Review show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide money management fee-based only firm. And I'm here with Barry Kite, chartered financial analyst, certified financial planner. We're back safely from Sarasota. We're at home today. Well, that's just a little bit chilly, 50 degrees in Charleston. That's cold for us.
Yes, it is.
And yes, it is. Bring your winter jammies. And we've got a lot that has happened. I mean, a lot that has happened this past week in the market. I was telling Barry before the show, as I was doing the notes for today's show, it's almost hard to squeeze what happened this past week in the market into just about a 50-minute show, but we will do our best. You know, last week we had that big rally in the market at the end of last week, and this week we had kind of a sideways market, I guess, but we had a lot of earnings reports. We had a lot of Fed speak. We had a lot of inflation news. We had a lot of geopolitics. We had a lot of predictions for the coming year, 2023, which is just around the corner. What will it bring? Welcome to today's Week in Review. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide money management firm, fee-based only, fiduciary only. I've been managing money for the last 23 years professionally. I've seen a lot in the market, the best days, the worst days, the best years, the worst years, the best bull markets, and some of the worst bear markets, especially in the year 2000. And Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst, and a certified financial planner is with us as always today. And he will be commenting on some of the things from this past week. We are a virtual firm. Now, our radio show is heard across the country. So we just have built the firm in the most efficient way we could thought we could do is to have a central office and then have folks. We manage money for folks all across America, Michigan, California, Georgia, Florida, Pennsylvania. I mean, you name it, just about every state in America. And we're a little bit different from most firms out there. We are active. We are not passive. That does not mean we're day trading. It means that we are very tactical. And at times, we're not real keen on the markets. And we've been in protective mode for the better part of this year. I think maybe some of the worst is now behind us, however. It kind of depends on how inflation pans out and just how high the Fed has to go. But it seems like most of the draconian measures by the Fed are now in place. Oh, that doesn't mean they're not going to keep hiking rates, but
yeah, it doesn't mean they're pivoting. Yeah, it doesn't mean they're pivoting. It means they may slow down on the rate of increases. And of course, you know, the ultimate question is how high do those, you know, does that rate end up becoming, right? So, if you know that's going to be 5.5%, well, you've got so much time to get there. In this instance, you know, they may change the pace, but certainly not pivoting in terms of lowering rates going forward. And, you know, likely going to be at, you know, it seems to be, even if they don't raise down the road, that you're going to be at an elevated rate for a period of time.
Yeah, now on the one hand, I'm optimistic that these rate hikes, which is about the only thing, the only tool the current administration is using to attack inflation, we could debate that all day long, other measures that they could take to ease inflation. I'm encouraged by the reports we had this past week. We had the PPI earlier in the week, which followed on the CPI the previous week, and it came in less than expected. That's the encouraging thing. Where I get discouraged is when I see these inflation reports continue to come in from Europe, where they're seeing record high inflation, and it doesn't seem to be cooling at all. And I'm also seeing record high inflation in Japan, of all places.
And particularly in the energy sector. And that's
to
me, that's the policy vulnerability from a policy standpoint.
Damn, I was going to say the same exact thing because we are following in their tracks of, you know, clamping down on fracking, on pipelines. Basically, it's a war on fossil fuels, which Europe is ahead of us in that. For better or worse, whether you're for it or against it, it has not turned out well for Europe so far. It's a big component of that record inflation. It's a big component of them being very, very nervous about their energy supplies this year, this winter especially.
Yeah, uncertainty. An extra level of uncertainty there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one thing to have enough fuel to heat your homes and stay warm and be able to cook your foods this winter, but it's another thing to have the energy to run your factories that run your economy. And there's a lot of question marks in Europe. The new prime minister of the UK has already said we're in recession, and it could last for quite some time until we get out of recession. And the fuel situation just continues to get worse over in Europe. We had a little drama in Europe this past week with we were in Florida all week in Sarasota. We'll give you a little recap of how that trip went and what we're hearing from boots on the ground as we met with a lot of people while we were there. But we were there, I think, on Wednesday, and the market was doing real well. We stopped to have lunch real quickly, and the market just went, turned around real quickly. It was a missile that landed in Poland and killed a couple of people. But, you know, it doesn't seem to have gone any further than that. It seems to be unintentional. It does spook the markets, however, that war could escalate beyond Ukraine. But so far, that doesn't seem to be the case. And they continue to have these issues with energy. And I'm reading today, we're being warned about the utilities across America are warning citizens of the U.S. that we may be facing energy shortages this year. We have the diesel crisis coming up in a few weeks here, where they're at critical lows. We had President Biden this past week basically say a couple weeks ago he said no fracking, and he's telling oil and gas companies and energy companies, you keep energy in reserves. We want you to have reserves in case we get in a pinch. Now, he released all of the country's reserves, almost. I don't know how much is left, 10, 20%, something like that. And he's telling companies, hey, you've got to keep energy, which is going to keep energy price or energy supplies
lower.
Very critical, very critical levels.
Well, yeah, keep supply lower, and then also cost wise, right? It actually makes the cost of the power more expensive on the back end.
Yeah, so we'll see. You know, that's part of the inflation equation, especially in Europe. It's really energy prices that are at the core of Europe's big inflation problem. Now, having said that, we're ending the week at $78 per barrel in oil. That's the lowest we've seen in a while. And I think that's more because of fear of a global slowdown it seems like the cases of COVID in China are increasing. They've said they're not going to have as big of draconian measures going forward, but the market doesn't seem to believe that. China's selling off at the end of the week, and oil is selling off. We also had a major warning from Saudi Arabia, the CEO of Aramco, the biggest oil company in the world, saying, you know what, there's a little bit of excess capacity right now out there for supply. But any kind of a hiccup at all, any kind of a hiccup at all, like China coming back online full bore, could create some real issues going forward. Well, when we come back, Samuel Bankman-Fried and crypto certainly was a big story this past week. What's it mean for the markets going forward? This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Type. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks, Best Inverse Funds Now show, Week in Review, with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide money management fee-based only firm. I run about, five portfolios, from very, very safe on down to the more aggressive portfolio. And everything in between. Now, my takeaway, we met with a lot of people in Sarasota, Florida, which is a pretty good indication, I suppose, of, you know, the retirees. There's a lot of retirees in Sarasota and what they're thinking right now and what they see for the future. My takeaway, and then I'll ask Barry for his, number one, is that they recognize, I mean, this has been a pretty bad year for the market. You got to go back to 08, 09 to find a year this bad. We've been in defensive mode for the better part of the year. We just don't believe that you should be fully invested all the time, especially when you have, you know, you can't go against the Fed. That's your biggest issue there. As interest rates are rising, that completely knocks out of the equation high PE growth stocks, and it knocks out of the equation bond funds, as they do very poorly in a rising interest rate environment. And we're not out of that rising interest rate environment yet. We heard this past week from several Fed governors that we still have a ways to go. So we continue to avoid the high PE risk on kind of stuff, growth stocks and bond funds that did so well back in 2020. But, you know, at the same time, I wouldn't say that there was a real feeling of despair. They recognize that there's also opportunity in this market. There are sectors of the market that do well in a rising interest rate environment. And owning right now, buying, I have never really been a big fan of owning bonds or bond funds, but I do run an individual bond portfolio with about nine individual bonds in it. And I am seeing some very, very, very attractive opportunities up around 6% right now in some of our best stocks now that also issue bonds. And I would just say going forward that I don't know that the market's going to do 6% per year over the next 3 years, but you could definitely find enough bonds out there right now. Maybe 5.5 to 6%, somewhere in there seems to be a sweet spot. So there's a real opportunity in that space. And I think there continues to be good opportunity in the dividend stock. Those are short duration stocks that have done much, much better than long duration stocks like, you know, the electric car stocks, etc. The other thing that while we were there, of course, Florida is a solid red state now, and I'm on a red channel, obviously, in Sarasota on one of the Salem stations. And this past week, we had an announcement from a Florida man. That's how the New York Post put it, Barry. Florida man makes big announcement. Was their
right.
headline.
Is that the bottom of the New York Post?
Yes. Right? And of all the people we met with, we asked every one of them, are you for or against Donald Trump running for president in 2024? And, I mean, they all like what Trump did, you know, while he was president, but they all, everyone, felt like, you know, it was time for him to maybe hand off the reins.
Yeah, as long as it was to DeSantis. As long as it was to DeSantis was kind of the, of course, the Florida governor.
That,
so
that person,
and that was kind of the caveat to that answer, right?
And I would also say that the seminal moment for them is when Trump called DeSantis Ron DeSanctimonious. That pretty much drove the nail in the coffin of Trump. And I just, look, in the stock market, there's a method of investing called momentum investing, which I adhere to. I like momentum, but I also like good value. You've got to have momentum in the stock market. And once a stock, like once AMD or once some of the electric car stocks or NVIDIA or those, once they lose their momentum, they may never get it back again. And I just think that I think there's a lot of Trump fatigue. That's a feeling I got because it comes with kind of all the drama and everything. So I'm just telling you, that's our takeaway. Now, Barry, you give me your takeaway real quick on from the folks we met with down there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just interesting because, you know, in terms of from a bond perspective, like you said, there is some they're really starting to see some opportunity there. Of course, you know, making a made a bond purchase last week. But there's, you know, for the longest time, it's been one of those things where, you need some exposure to bonds, and it was kind of, you know, kind of hold your nose and allocate right towards, you know, a portion of your assets towards bonds. And so
individual bonds. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so in, you know, it's just, you know, and it was interesting to, you know, actually have discussions around, around bonds just because, with yields where they are, you know, certainly new issues are looking much more attractive.
Yeah, and, you know, just going forward over the next 3 years, I think a lot of people would be happy in the stock market if they could get 5.5 to 6% per year over the next 3 years. You know, that's, I don't know, that's kind of a hard proposition to see, honestly. There's going to be sectors within the market that will do that or better than that, hopefully. But if you can take a decent company that's issuing a 3 year, 2, 3, 4 year, 5 year bond up in the high fives and sixes, that's a pretty good proposition to consider. Okay. I got to talk about the big crypto fallout because this is a huge story. It really is. I have never been a fan of Bitcoin or the other cryptos. I've warned against them, ever since really that they came out. And yes, I know they got to 66,000 at one time. Bitcoin did. Well, now it's 16,000. And, you know, here's the deal. There's no regulation right now, which is pretty amazing that there wasn't any regulation. And it turns out that this Sam Bankman-Fried is his girlfriend is the daughter of somebody who is right next to Gary Gensler on the SEC. And it just seems like there's some connections here that are quite disturbing. The second thing we learn is that Fried was the second biggest donor to the Democratic Party behind, Zuckerberg? So, you know, a lot of that money that was taken from these people ended up, in elections, okay, in ads for elections. And we've learned about this new religion, I guess it's been around for some time there, altruism. Where you're doing a good thing by taking money and investing it in good causes around the world. When we come back, we'll talk about where the opportunities are and our forecast for 2023. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks, Best Inverse Funds Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson and chartered financial analyst Barry Keit. Well, before we start talking about any projections for 2023, let's just look back and let's look at where we're at so far this year. The S&P 500 after yesterday is 17.2%. 17.2%. The inverse of the S&P 500, which is SH, let's not forget, that's an asset class that is available for us to invest in. There are inverse funds on almost every major index out there, many sectors of the market out there. You can inverse. We've done really well with an inverse fund on the bond market this year. Our TBT has almost doubled this year. So don't forget that those are available as hedges and as opportunities to invest in. The NASDAQ is down 29% so far this year. It's taken it a whole lot harder than the S&P 500 because the NASDAQ has higher PE stocks in it. And in a rising interest rate environment, the higher the PE of the stock, the more the stock gets pelted. And we've seen an absolute, bashing of those stocks. I think ARK Funds is still down about over 50% this year. That's even going further out on that PE scale and duration scale. That's been a very poor place to be. Now you look at the Dow, it's only down 7.7%. Why? Lower PE ratios, which continues to be a theme of this market. Keep your PE ratios low. And there's, I think, almost every stock in the Dow, most of them, pay a dividend. That's considered to be a shorter duration stock as opposed to a long duration stock, and they've fared much better in this environment. I would say that the average growth fund, I kind of use Fidelity, Magellan, and the Growth Fund of America. Those are a couple of major, huge growth funds that pretty much kind of are good representatives of the growth fund sector of the market. It's been a terrible year. They're down about 28% so far this year. And that's because, again, this market has not favored growth stocks. And I don't think it's going to favor them yet. I think you still got to avoid the high PE stocks. If you think this is time to get back into NVIDIA, Rivian and Teladoc some of those other really high-flying PE long-duration stocks, no, I don't think it is time yet. We got to wait till we see peak inflation and we start to see the interest rate hikes really settle down. Now, on the one hand, inflation seems to be cooling off, but we look to Europe, which is ahead of us in this whole process, and it's not cooling off over there. Now, as far as projections for next year, well, I'm an earnings-based guy. The best indicator for the markets, in my experience, 23 years as a professional money manager, the market follows earnings. It's pretty simple. I mean, there's no use to make it more complicated than that. There's two parts of the equation that make up the S&P 500 target price. The first part of the equation is how much is the S&P 500 going to make next year earnings per share. It's a number. You take all 500 companies and you apply a formula and you come down to one number. Let's just look at that for a minute. Back in 2009, when the market bottomed, S&P 500 earnings were at $60 per share. $60 per share. We're going to finish this year, 2022, at about $225 per share. And even more importantly, those earnings have grown since 2009. They've grown pretty much every year except for the COVID year. They've grown to this current level. Actually, we're going to come in at about $221 per share this year, okay? $221. But the biggest reason the market has been going up since 2009 is because earnings have been going up. And, you know, you put a 17 or 18 multiple on those earnings, and you're going to see why the S&P 500 has gone up from about 670 back in 2009, and it's been as high as about 4,500 here late last year. So now, obviously, it just makes common sense that we need to know what the S&P, what the estimates are for next year, 2023, and even more importantly, the year after that, 2024. Because not only does the market trade on earnings, but even more importantly, it trades on earnings expectations. Who was it that raised was it Walmart, Barry, this past week that raised their guidance?
Yep. I think they were up, I don't know, roughly 6% or so at one point, during the day they announced earnings. And, you know, in just looking this week, we had a lot of retail earnings out, and, in overall, retail numbers were pretty promising.
Pretty good.
The stocks probably shot up a little bit. Well, yeah, and then a lot of those stocks probably shot up a little further than they should. But, I think what was the one we were talking about, it wasn't Bed Bath & Beyond. It was the Bath & Body Works. I think one day this week it was up 16% or something. But overall, American consumers still hanging in there and spending away as America tends to do. But, leading economic indicator came in on Friday and was, pretty disappointing, almost, kind of indicates, the beginnings or potentially in a recession. And, Philadelphia Fed Manufacturing Index, it was supposed to come in at -6%, came in at a -19.4, in terms of the reading. That's a big change, right? So it's pretty interesting to see how, in terms of earnings, as you're talking about earnings, future potential, recession in 2023, is certainly a headwind for that E part of your equation.
Exactly. And, I'm at currently for next year, I'm at $228 versus $221 this year. Goldman Sachs is at 221. They're saying there will be no growth in earnings this year. And if they're right, it's going to be a really flat year for the market in 2023. And any kind of a hiccup, obviously, going into a recession, continued inflation, energy shortages, more geopolitics. You're going to have to really be a stock picker in 2023, like you were had to be this past year. You're going to have to take advantage of some of the vulnerable areas of the market with some inverse funds. I think Europe is still vulnerable. I think that the emerging markets, which China are a big part of, are still vulnerable. And I think there's still areas of the market, like the high PE sector of the market is still vulnerable. And then I think, again, that these locking in a 5.5% or 6% on some individual bonds, which are totally liquid. I mean, you're not buying an annuity or whatever that is illiquid. There's no commissions on buying it, very small transaction costs. But you have to be able to find and buy the right ones. And, of course, we do that. We've also hedged our individual bond portfolio this year with the inverse bond ETF. And it's up about 90% this year, I think.
Yeah, SJB early in the year, and also of course TBT for the entire part of the year, and it's a way to manage interest rate risk.
Now, the second part of that equation, okay, earnings, we think there's going to be about a 5% growth in earnings next year. The second part of that equation, and I update it every Saturday. Every Saturday I send out my newsletter. I've been writing it for the last 23 years. Now, the multiplier, what are we going to multiply those earnings by? We started the year with a multiplier, a forward P.E. ratio of 23. When the 5 to 10 year average is more in the 17 to 18 area. How did we get to 23? When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the impact of interest rates on the multiplier. And we're going to look ahead to 2023 and 2024 as to what we see as the multiplier and the correct earnings estimates or decent earnings estimates right now. We'll be right back.
You gotta go where you wanna go, do what you wanna do, live whoever you wanna be. You gotta go where you wanna go, do what you wanna do, live whoever you wanna be.
And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks, Best Inverse Funds Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunnarsson and chartered financial analyst Barry Keit. Well, okay, so 2022, not a very good year in the market, mostly because of P.E. ratio contraction. P.E. ratios contract as interest rates go higher. We really didn't have a bad year in earnings. We pretty much came in where expected, maybe a little bit lower, but it was the P.E. ratio, the multiplier, going from 23 down to 17 in a rising interest rate environment that really took that bite, 28%, out of the NASDAQ. So obviously it was not a good year to be in high P.E. stocks. I don't know where your broker, your money manager, your financial planner, maybe you yourself. We saw portfolios while we were in Sarasota this past week that were still in high PE stocks that did well in 2020, actually. But it was time to get out of those as soon as the Fed started pretty much saying that we're going to be hiking rates. And that was really early last year.
Yeah, the day after Thanksgiving. This is the day after Thanksgiving, so we're coming up almost on a year, I guess, next Friday. So
he basically sounded the whistle that we're coming around the tracks with this freight train, and we're going to absolutely mow down bond funds and high PE growth stocks. And of course, we also saw a lot of people this past week in Florida sitting with some very large positions in bond funds that have been run over by the freight train. It's probably too late now. I mean, the damage has been done, and now you got to wait for earnings or interest rates to start going down or leveling off once again. We got out of the way of all of that. In fact, we went inverse on some of that stuff. We owned SARC earlier in the year, which was inverse Cathie Wood's ARC funds. We went inverse the bond market with TBT, which is two times inverse the bond market. It had a very good year. And then throughout the year, off and on, we used hedges like SH, which is inverse the S&P 500, DXD, which is inverse the Dow, and especially PSQ, which is inverse the NASDAQ. Consider that the NASDAQ was up down 28% this year. PSQ was up 28%. So the market's looking for about 5 to 6% growth next year. I don't think the PE multiple is going to go much lower. We've kind of settled in at 17, which is the long-time average. I'm a little bit more worried about the earnings part of it. If we get flat earnings next year, we've got an S&P that's worth 3,800. Okay, that's where we are now. That would be my 6 month target price right now, $3,800. And I think we're a little over $3,900 right now. But now we've got to look ahead to 2024. That's really where the market's looking. You have to remember that as an investor. The market's not looking at yesterday, today, or tomorrow. Most individual investors are, but the market, the professional money managers, and the market itself, the hedge funds, whatnot, they're looking ahead really now to 2024. And what they see in 2024 right now, the consensus estimate out there, I'm lower than the consensus quite a bit. I'm at $245 per share in 2024. A 17 multiple gets you to $4,165. That's my 12-month target price. That doesn't give you a whole lot of upside potential from here, 4 or 5%. Okay, 12 months from now. That's why some of those individual bonds are looking pretty attractive at 5 to 6%. And a pretty high degree of safety there if it's a good company. It's pretty rare for a company to default on their bonds. Yes, it does happen. It has happened. There's been some high-profile incidences of that. I remember GM, which was laden with debt and not doing well. They welched on their bonds at one point in time. But we try to pick companies that are very, very healthy. So, okay, so $4,165, and I think Goldman Sachs' target price for 12 months out is $4,000. So now you're going to have to be, number one, a stock picker within that S&P 500, or, you know, we do go outside of the S&P 500, obviously. I still don't think it's going to be a good environment for the NASDAQ, and tech in particular. It's definitely not going to be a good environment for long-duration stocks, the Rivians, the Teladocs, the Carvanas, the Rokus of the world. That's still going to be a very dicey environment there. In fact, I would still have an inverse fund, SARC, against that part of the market. And I think it's going to be the short-duration stocks, once again, that have done so well this year. Really good, high-quality companies that are still growing, not their dividend, their earnings. We don't like companies that are growing their dividend or have big, fat dividends, the AT&Ts, the Philip Morris's of the world. They're not growing anymore. We would rather take a 2 to 3% dividend, 1.5%, earnings growth, and we want capital appreciation and income, the best of both worlds. And then, like I said before, 5-6% not looking too bad right now, and just holding some individual bonds, so maybe 7, 8, 9, something like that. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can reach us at 855-611-BEST. That's our toll-free nationwide number, 855-611-BEST. I've written a newsletter for the last 23 years that updates my target price every week. It shows what we currently own, our different portfolios, how they've done. You might want to take a look this year at an active manager versus a passive manager. This is not a passive world. It's a very active world, and it requires some tactical changes from time to time. We haven't seen a rising interest rate environment for 40 years. And if your broker or your financial guy or gal is still doing the same thing that they did in a dropping interest rate environment, you're still on the railroad tracks, all right? Give us a call at 855-611-BEST or get 2 free weeks of my newsletter at GundersonCapital.com. That's GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade.
Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.